resurrection of Jesus, the conquering of sin, of death, the violence, of evil, of hatred. It's our night of nights. This is the moment that changes everything, because we believe that Jesus, who was crucified, is now risen, lives with the Father, and will die no more. This is our night of nights. Now you may know that next weekend, the Global Atheist Convention is meeting just down the road here in Melbourne. I'm not sure if you knew that or not. So I guess next week they're going to have their night of nights. And the thing that the title of their conference, their sort of jamboree, is a celebration of reason. Now, it might be just that I'm feeling a little cheeky tonight, and it could be just that that title really irritates me, but maybe it's also because there's a little bit of resurrection joy going on. But I want to really take that apart tonight. I want to really bring down that title as a celebration of reason. Because what we want to celebrate tonight is the true cause for celebration, and that we have got reasons for that. So tonight, let me give you some reasons for why we as Christians believe in the resurrection. Because our friends down the road next week, they're going to mock us, and they're going to sneer at us, and they're going to look condescendingly at Christian belief. They're going to think that we are irrational for being here this evening. So I want to suggest to you, and I want to proclaim to you, that we've got good reasons for our faith, and we have got the best reason ever to celebrate. So, let's start with the reasons. The first thing I want you to notice is about the quality of the apostles before and afterwards. What they say, the way they live, and the way they die. So the first thing is what they say. You remember, up until the moment of Jesus' death, or perhaps at least to the moment where he has been arrested, they think that they're following the Messiah, the one that the people of Israel had been hoping for. One of the marks of the Messiah, in fact, one of the key signs of the Messiah, was that he would liberate Israel from Israel's captives. That was a sure sign that you had your money on the right bloke. If he was going to set the people of Israel free, he was the guy to watch. Now that all comes tumbling down when Jesus hangs upon the cross. Because the very people who kill him are the very people that Jesus should have been defeating if he really was the Messiah. So that's why the disciples run away. But only a short moment later, only within a matter of days, they are saying that this really is the Messiah. That Jesus really is the one who's going to set people free. Now that's only possible, that only makes sense, if they believe that he'd risen from the dead. That proclamation is absolutely absurd to a first century Jew if the Messiah did not somehow defeat death, because otherwise he couldn't have been the one. He couldn't have been the one that they were hoping for. He couldn't have been the Messiah who would bring freedom to Israel. So the first part of the disciples' message is that moment when they say, it's got to still be him that we're following. Otherwise, it makes no sense. The second part of the story or of their message is the way they lived. You see, after his resurrection, a group of very scared men and women went everywhere they could to proclaim that he was risen. And it didn't stop them when they were persecuted. It didn't stop them when stones were thrown at them. It didn't stop when they were beaten. Again and again, they said, the one that we had believed in is still with us. He did die, but now he's risen. They proclaimed that whether their message was welcome or unwelcome. They proclaimed it ultimately until they gave their lives. Now here's the thing I really want you to notice about that. Lots of people die thinking what they believe is the truth. Witness every terrorist who's ever given up his life or her life for the cause they believe in. But nobody dies for something were prepared to go to death weren't believing. They may have been deluded. We'll come to that. But they certainly weren't faking it. They certainly weren't making it up. Because if they were making it up, at some point they would have said, "Sorry, time out. I'm not ready to go all the way with this." He actually cooked it up one day when we had a little bit to smoke, something to drink. But they wouldn't have gone to their deaths. Not for something that they'd made up. They would have had somebody at some point say, "Sorry guys, I'm out. You guys can take this to its sorry conclusion, but there's no way I'm going through with it." But none of them did that. The conclusion that I think is reasonable to draw from that is that they believed wholeheartedly that Jesus was risen from the dead. That they had met him, that they had encountered him, and that it was really him. Which brings us to another objection, something that our friends down the road would probably raise. That they were deluded, that they were mistaken. To which I would want to say simply this. That when those disciples, when we hear the stories of their meeting with Jesus, they, first of all, weren't having a group hallucination. Again, they hadn't been smoking some interesting stuff, and all of a sudden they came up with an idea together where they thought, you know what, the one that we just witnessed die, he's actually still with us in some way and we've touched him. You only have to ask a psychologist to know that hallucinations just don't work like that. A, you can't touch anybody, and B, you can't have a hallucination together. Everybody has their own little trip. Nobody has it all the same time. So I'm told. The second thing about it, the second reason why it's not they're not deluded, is because the other possibility here is that they're having like a spiritual sense of his resurrection. So they were so taken with his message, they were so moved by what Jesus had said during his life, that in the wake of his crucifixion, they sat around and eventually someone said, "I feel in my heart that he's still with us. I feel in my heart he's still here." The problem with that is that that's not what they actually say in the Gospels. They say they ate with him. They say he let them touch him. They say that he spoke with them and they were able to speak with him, and then he appeared to people again and again in different locations and places. They're explicitly ruling out that conclusion. So they're either lying at this point or it's the truth. And finally, sometimes people have suggested that they had an experience of what's called cognitive dissonance. Okay, again, it's a little bit like the spiritual sort of resurrection kind of theory. Basically what it's saying is that they were so upset that Jesus had died, so great a teacher had said such wonderful things, that really they couldn't bring themselves to believe that he was God. And so while at one level they knew he was dead, the cognitive dissonance kicks in and they say, "No, he's really with us still." And friends, again, the only problem with that is that they touched him. They spoke with him. They shared a meal with him. So, have I proved the resurrection at this point? Have I given you a watertight argument? No. I can't do that. You've got to trust in the testimony of others. You've got to believe that those first disciples weren't lying. But you've also got to ask yourself this question. Could such an explosive moment, could such a new beginning of a movement have had such an impact, an effect, a force in the world if it was just a bunch of guys who decided one day that they were going to make their own new religion? I don't think so. I can't prove it to you. But you've got to trust, you've got to decide whether you trust in the belief and the testimony of others. And the testimony of others too, who through the pages of history have believed in Jesus. Who actually believe that they also have met him by the power of his Spirit. The church is made up of those people who say, "I too have met the risen Jesus by the power of his Spirit." And they may, we, those people through those ages, all of us gathered here today, we may not have seen him in the way those first disciples did after his resurrection. But by his Spirit, in and through the power of the risen Lord, we can meet him still. We can know him still. testimony we believe in is the testimony of those first disciples, of men and women through the pages of history, and ultimately it will be the testimony of Jesus himself working in your hearts, convincing you that this is the truth, that he is with you, that he is here, that God has come to dwell within us by the power of his Spirit. You know, we believe so many things on testimony. We believe so many things on the basis of what other people say. The only reason you know your birthday is because you trust certain people who wrote it down. The only reason, and I want you to think about this for a moment because it's really important, you know you're loved by the people who love you most because you trust their word. The people who love you most have told you, and that's why you believe them. And they've shown it to you by their actions, and that's why you believe them. So there'll be no empirical proof for the resurrection of Jesus. But you don't need empirical proof. You need enough good reasons to make a step of faith, to trust that the one who had been crucified rose as his first disciples said, and that people have been continuing to meet him ever since. Now the second part of the atheists' little conference byline is a celebration of reason. So I want to give you some reasons why we should be celebrating tonight, if you need them. The first reason is that the resurrection of Jesus means that we can know God. The resurrection of Jesus means that we can know God because he's risen, because he's alive, because we can know him. We can know God with us and within us. My friends, that's the most extraordinary thing. That is the most wonderful news. Because not only do we know God, but we know just what God's like in this moment. Because all of the things that Jesus said was true, the reason why he went to the cross, all of that has been vindicated by his resurrection. And that means that God is love. That means that God is unfathomable mercy. That means that God is true hope, true beauty, true joy, true peace. It's because Jesus is risen that we know what God is really like. We know the incredible difference that it makes to have discovered him. The second reason, if you like, for our celebration tonight is because a new creation has been unleashed in the world. Something new takes place. You get a hint of that in the gospel tonight when we're told that the women came down to the tomb just as the sun was rising. That's very deliberate symbolism. What it's saying to us is that something new is going on in the life of men and women. That because of Jesus, love has been unleashed in the world in a whole new way. It seems obvious to us today that the meaning of life is to love one another. And it seems obvious to us today that you're supposed to care for every person. And it seems obvious today that the poorest and the weakest and the least, that those who are marginalized or excluded, are the ones that we should love the most. That seems obvious. But you know what? It wasn't obvious to the people of the Roman Empire. That's something new that comes with Christianity because Jesus told us about it. He said that every person matters. And the first followers of Jesus were the weakest in the Roman society. They were slaves. They were women. They were everybody who was excluded or left out. Why? Because all of a sudden they realized that they had worth and dignity and value and that they mattered. And the church again and again said, you've got to care for those people. Why? Because Jesus told us to. Something new was unleashed in the world, a power of loving that the pagan world did not know. If we take it for granted today that that's the meaning of life, that love is supposed to reach out to every person, that nobody should be denied, that everybody is equal in dignity in the sight of God, that's because of the effect of Christianity. Don't take that for granted. Don't take that for granted. That's possible because of Jesus' message. And it's possible that we believe that now because it didn't die with him on the cross, but because he's risen. And when we forget that, and our society some people will not be considered worthy of our love and care and respect. But the weakest and the most marginalized amongst us, who may have new faces and names, will be left out, will be excluded, will be discriminated against, will even be perhaps killed. Just as it happened in the society in which Christianity was born. A new humanity was born. And we have reason to celebrate that tonight. Because it says that you matter and that I matter, and the person that you don't like the most matters, and the person that you love the most matters, that we all matter in the sight of God. Every single one of us. That's good news. It was extraordinary news to the people of Jesus' time in the early Roman Empire. It was amazing news because they simply didn't believe it. They simply didn't think it was true. Which leads us to the third reason why we've got something to celebrate today. And that's that the resurrection brings joy. I don't know if you've noticed that, but if Jesus really is risen, if he's really conquered the power of sin and death, if you know that you have an eternal destiny, if you know that you have a value and worth and dignity, then there's a joy that marks the Christian. There's a confidence, not an arrogance or a pride, but a confidence that no matter what happens, love will win. That no matter what happens, the light is stronger than the darkness. That no matter what happens, goodness will overcome. Violence will be defeated. That's the promise of our faith. But you know, the challenge for us, the implication of that for us tonight, is that we're to live it. That we're to live that joy. That we're to live out the implications and consequences of following the risen Jesus. Because unless we're prepared to do that, the people down the road have got reasons for their disbelief. Guarantee to you that the vast majority of people who will go to the atheist convention next weekend will be angry in some way about Christianity and about Christians in particular. They'll have been hurt because we've failed to be the people that Jesus has called us to be. We've failed to live the resurrection life. We've failed to live the joy. We've failed to live the hope that he's called us to. We've failed to be the bringers of that new humanity. Now that's not enough reason for people to give up on Christianity. Let's be realistic about the human condition and about the reality of a human institution like the church. What it does point to us, what it invites us to, is to recommit ourselves tonight, to say yes again to the risen Jesus, to say yes again to joy, and to say yes again to that new humanity, so that people might know that God is real, that we have a God of incredible love, love that knows no depths or boundaries, love that knows no limits. Let's, by our lives, by the choices we make, by the joy that people can see and touch in our faces,